This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. George Williams coaches one of the most successful track and field programs in the country. He served as coach at St. Augustine's University in Raleigh for 38 years, and this spring he won his 35th Division II National Championship. He's also been a coach and assistant coach for the U.S. men's team in three Olympic Games. His runners include former world record holder Michael Johnson and Bershon Batman Jackson. That success comes from a long history of leadership. Williams helped integrate his city track team in Miami. He pushed for integration in Cary Public Schools. And this hour, we will meet George Williams, who joins us now. What a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you.
Thanks, Frank. It's great to be here. And thank you and Will and your whole organization for having me on today.
Will Michaels produced this segment and talked with you at length to help prepare me for this interview, and that's how that goes. And what he told me and what I've learned about you is simply astonishing. But let's start at the beginning. You grew up and were born in Miami, right?
No, I was born in Tallahassee, but I grew up in Miami. I was born in Tallahassee, Florida. And at an early age, my father passed, and my mother was a little ill. So she moved to Miami with her sister, and so she moved the rest of the family to Miami. So from age 12 on, I lived in Miami.
Overtown neighborhood.
Overtown neighborhood, one of the greatest neighborhoods ever.
A great neighborhood and a tough neighborhood to grow up in?
Very tough, very tough. It was at the day. It's a little tougher now, but it was pretty tough, and it was a village. Everybody tried to raise everybody there, so we didn't have that problem. You know, we had great guys, Les Brown, Larry Little, John Glover, you know, Jesse London, a few of outstanding people there that I thought was great, that I walked to school with every day. Wow. And even Esther Rowe, who was on Good Times, she went to my high school, and she was from Overtown. And so you started thinking of names and calling names. I don't like to call names because you miss somebody, but Overtown produced a lot of great people.
We had named one actress, but a number of athletes in that group. Were you an athlete?
Yes, I was. I was a basketball player, and I ran track. And I made the news a lot. I was one of the probably top basketball players in the Dade County area during my time.
You were making the news. You were a top athlete in the area. But that was a time of segregation, so you wouldn't have been playing on the white team or running for the white team unless you and a friend had asked. Tell
right.
us that story.
Yeah, well, one day Jesse Holt, who is in Miami now, he and I decided we wanted to be on a track club. We didn't have a track club in our neighborhood, and we knew they had a track club on 36th Street at Morris Park.
I'm guessing that might be a white neighborhood.
And it was a white neighborhood at that time. Matter of fact, the high school is Jackson High School, so you can imagine what kind of neighborhood that was. So we went over, and we looked through the gate. We were tempting, and so I told Jesse that I was going to go and ask these guys. And Jesse said, well, I'm going to wait at the gate, because if anything happened to you, I can deliver the message. And I said, well, Jesse, you know, let's go together. He said, no, I'll just wait here. And so I went and asked the guys, and I said, well, look, my name is George Williams and my friend Jesse Holt. And they said, oh, we know about you guys. Y'all pretty good athletes. I said, yes, and we'd like to be a part of your track club. And sure enough, I can't think of the kid's name now, but he said, well, you know, this park is not integrated, but if you guys want to run with us, we'll make it happen. And so I said, wow, I was so happy. And I went to tell Jesse Holt that they said okay, and Jesse saw me running. He took out and started running. And so I had to run him down to tell him that it was okay. He thought they were asking. They was after me, and I said, no, I was just trying to deliver the message, man. And,
I'm laughing, funny. But a big part of that's not funny, I guess.
Right.
But
yeah.
It's kind of sad, and yet a hysterical picture when you think about you running with the good news and him terrified that the worst was about to happen.
Yeah.
What year was that, 61?
That was in 1960.
How'd you do?
We did well. Gosh, we won the club championship around there, and I think I won. I still have the medals. I think I won about five or six medals. Wow. Jesse won about five. We were the relay team. I did about four or five different events, and, we were just great. It was good to have us together, and we had some good distant runners there. And so we turn out to be one of the best club teams in the city and probably in the state.
It sounds like the team, the athletes, and the coaches were ready for you.
Yeah.
What about the city of Miami?
The city of Miami quite wasn't ready. It took a couple of teeth to pull, but they got it done. And I appreciate those folks, and I will already remember them in my heart forever.
Was it difficult for you? I can see this is an emotional time for you as you recall that time in Miami when you were on a team that embraced you even though the larger community did not, and you stuck with it, and you were a champion, and you won a lot of awards.
We stuck with it, and we made it.
On from Miami, you went on to college.
Yep, now that's the good part. I'm back. Yeah, we went on to college, and we really wanted to go to the University of Miami or Florida somewhere, but they wasn't taking us in. And so I did have an offer at Kansas, and that didn't work out. So I was laying around the house, and so Jesse ended up going to Grambling, and a couple more guys went to Grambling and Southern University, and I didn't want to go that far away from home. So I had some friends that went to St. Augustine's University, and so they told the coach that I was still laying around, and I was one of the best basketball players and the track guys that they can find. And so they called me, and I went to St. Augustine's, and it was always a hard time. That's why I get emotional about this, because on my way to St. Augustine's, I had to, when I got to South Carolina, they made me stand up all the way to Raleigh to give a white lady a seat. And,
so you still hadn't, what a time this must be for you. You'd sort of broken a color barrier, but integration had not yet fallen legally in the South. The amount of turmoil for you to be a successful athlete, to know what you can do as an athlete, to have proved it on an integrated team in a city that wasn't ready for you. And yet still now the bus ride from Florida to North Carolina, it's staring you in the face again. Well,
I guess it was the time, and so it's gone now, but I get a little emotional about it because everybody sees the glory, but they don't know the story, and the story is pretty big. And but now I move around and I do things that I like to do, but I hate to talk about those stories because it brings sometimes bad memories back. And but I'm having a good time now. I'm not having a bad time. But I think when I try to work with the young people and let them know that everything wasn't what they seemed to be, and that I wasn't bone grown, that I've gone through a lot of the things that they have, I get a little emotional about it, but.
St. Augs track and field coach George Williams.
But I'm not mad with anybody.
is my guest on the State of Things. One of the most successful coaches today in college athletics. Well, I'm going to keep you there a little bit, and I'm going to try not to pick at this. But I do want to know if you felt the pressure to perform even more. In other words, was a kind of consciousness about you representing? Did you feel that you were representing when you performed because of that?
I always felt like I need to do my best because the fact that it wasn't easy. Yeah. And when things are not easy, it takes you to another level. And so I was trying to make sure that the level I get to, that some other black kid or black person would say, hey, if we can get it done, we can get it done. And maybe they won't have to go through what I've had gone through. And I used to kind of keep that to myself. Just the touch time I talked about it, that's why I got kind of emotional, because I don't like to talk about it too much. But whatever happened, and I'm still here today, and I've helped over 800 or maybe 900 students, some of them athletes and some of them just regular students, to make the change and to go through the barons. And so... It's been a good ride. You can't you can't worry about what happened in the past. You go by with what's now and what the future has to bring. And so that's what I work on.
What about that transition to North Carolina? You said you didn't want to move too far away from home, but you were several miles from home.
It was the long ways because the fact that I had no other choice. That was the only way out. The other schools didn't accept me locally in the state of Florida. And so you had to go there. And I definitely wanted to do something different and better than hang around Overtown all the time. And once I got here, I just put all the energy I could into what I was doing.
You sure have.
It turned out to be successful.
We are lucky to have you on the State of Things today. George Williams, athletic director and track coach at St. Augustine's University in Raleigh. Just ahead, we'll talk about his success, the many student athletes he has coached, and his experience in Raleigh and the future on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio, talking with the athletic director and track coach at St. Augustine's University in Raleigh, North Carolina. George Williams is with me. You came to St. Augs as a freshman in 61. We talked a little bit about the move. You had to make that transition. How was your college athletic career?
Well, Frank, it went good. I was the only freshman to make the basketball team, and that was good. And we didn't have a track program, as we said, but Coach Curry, who was the track coach, we ran around the angle, which is there now. That was our track. And we had a little grass down in the bottom of the hill where Martin Luther King building is now. Mm-hmm. King building. And so we made out with what we had. And so that was a good lesson. I've learned how to just use what you have, because when I started coaching track, we didn't have a track. So, and I think we won, about 9 or 10 championships without a track. Wow. So you just don't know which way life will tell you, but you just go out and persevere. And so that we did that. And basketball was great. Still my claim to fame is that I held Earl of Pearl Monroe to 6 points.
Wow.
And so we always talk about that, you know, and Pearl always laughed too. But he was just a junior then, I think, a junior or sophomore. So
where was he playing?
He was playing Winston-Salem State.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Held him to 6 points. Well, you can always hold that over his head.
Yeah, I always hold that. Well, when he and I talk, we always laugh about that. And Pearl's a good guy. And,
what were your plans for yourself? You want to play pro ball?
Yeah, I was supposed to play with the Detroit Pistons, but that didn't work out. So and then I came back to Raleigh and started coaching and teaching in the Wake County Public School.
You were in Cary.
I was in Cary. And I think that's when they first started integrating in 66, 67. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you were part of that. So now what were you doing? You were coaching?
I was the coach, right? I coached every sport they had. I was doing physical education. Although I have my education background is early childhood and elementary education. Yeah. But they put me in physical education. They thought that would be a good, being an athlete and a person of my status. They said it'd be better to deal with those kids from that angle than any other angle. And I thought we had one of the best programs out. We sent them all to Cary High after they left there. And Cary High had one of the most successful high school back in the 60s, if you look at it, programs in the Wake County area. And so it was a good feeding system. And then later they built the junior high school now. And all of it started mixing up.
What was that transition like, though? You had aspirations. You wanted to play, as you said, for the Pistons, mm-hmm. and then you didn't. Was that a big transition for you, the idea that you're not going to play pro ball and now you're teaching?
No, it wasn't a big transition. I had a job. Yeah. And all I wanted was a job, and I had a chance to help other young students along the way. And at that time, you had a job, and I did most of the things I wanted to do. I was able to live comfortable. Wasn't much money, but back in the day, you didn't need much money. All you had to do was manage your money very well, and I managed my money very well, and I was very relaxed and comfortable.
How have things changed in those last 50 years?
God, things have changed. It sometimes it seems like it's changed for the better. There are better jobs, there are more money, but there's still more problems.
Yeah.
Back in the day, it wasn't that many problems. I think people got along better, and people were not so cutthroat. They talk things out and they discuss things. They understood when you were not happy or mm-hmm. when you are happy. But now when people are not happy, it's more like a vigilante type thing. Yeah. They just started hurting folks and doing things to people. And back in that, you would probably never hear of anything like that.
Working things out. You decided to go back to school after teaching for a few years, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
Oh, yes. I went to grad school. I went to Wake Forest University and got a degree in college administration. And I came back and I worked at St. Augustine's University and at missions. Well, I started in alumni affairs to bring the alumni together because a lot of them knew me because of my athletic ability. Then I worked on alumni affairs for a while. And then they asked me, said, well, look, could you help in recruiting at missions? And I said, oh, of course. And so I went out and started recruiting students. And we had almost 2,000 students when I was recruiting at St. And
were you recruiting on the basis of athletics as well?
I was doing it on just all students.
Yeah.
And some athletes, but all students. And after the recruiting, they asked me, now we need a social outlet. Could you be in charge of student activity? And I said, yes. And they said, do student activities and be an assistant basketball coach. So I was assistant basketball coach and student activities, and I did that for a while. And then one day Dr. Davis walked in and said, oh, gosh, we lost our track coach. Could you hold the track team until we find a new track coach? And I said, Dr. Davis, you know basketball is my forte, but I will do track for you until you find someone else. And so that was in 1976. And so in 1996, I was still interim track coach.
Interim track coach for 20 years.
Yeah, 20 years.
At any time along the way, did you say, hey, folks, couldn't I have the job?
A lot of times I say, hey, when you go to find somebody for this job, you know? And they say, well, and while I was there, I mean, I started winning in 1985. I started winning championship.
Yeah.
And that was my first championship. And so they say, well, you know, just hold it, you know? And then they started coming. And so in 1996, Dr. Franklin, who was the vice president of the NCAA, I was telling him that he needed to be on the president council. And he said, no, I can't do that. I don't know that much about athletics. I said, well, I need somebody in the huddle. If they're in the huddle, you'll know the play. You know what they're doing at the NCAA. So he went and he got on the president council. They voted for him. And after that, he was very active. And then they said, hey, let's hire this guy. And he moved up to
the How did that change? Why did you think you needed somebody at the university on the NCAA?
Because a lot of times, if you don't know what's going on, it's hard to deal with the situation. And I knew at that time the NCAA make rules. I was on the NCAA committee. Mm-hmm. Before that, I told him about that. And I know how we function on these committees. And most of the rules and regulations that the NCAA does is always an issue that some school or somebody has an issue. So once they find, if you know what these issues are, then we'll be way ahead of the game and we'll know how to deal with them in the future and keep a steady and a stellar program instead of making mistakes like so many other schools do.
Well, that's what I hear. I mean, these days you hear over and over again that the NCAA has become so like nobody knows what the rules are, and it's just easy to run afoul of the rules because there are so many and many of them conflict. I mean, the sense is that that is kind of chaos these days.
Right, and that's why you need somebody who deals with those kind of student athletes on those committees and then involved into the network, because those schools that have a lot, they're going to make rules that continue their schools to be dominant with the finance and everything. But schools like St. Augustine's and a university and other schools who don't have that much. Sometimes those rules hurt those people because the ones up there who making the rule don't know anything about these young folks and what their needs are.
What did you learn about coaching in those years? How do you think you, would you say by 1985 you started winning championships?
Oh, well, I had a mentor. I had Dr. Walker. Dr. Leroy Walker started me off. Wow. When I got the job in 96, I talked to Dr. Walker.
North Carolina Central, right?
At North Carolina Central, you know, how do you build a track program? And you've been very successful, and you're doing a lot of great things, and how do you do this? And so he gave me a couple of books on biomechanics techniques and programs, how to develop a good workout program. And so I started with that. I didn't have a track. But a lot of the things like plyos and biomechanics and stuff that I was doing with the kids, and we were running the streets of Raleigh, so that was our running, and the other stuff we can do on campus in the grassy areas. And so we started that, and it started building the kids up, and they started running. And then I asked Big House Gaines, and Big House Gaines, he was a good winning basketball coach. I was saying, this guy winning, so let me talk to him.
At Winston-Salem State.
Yeah. So I went to talk to Big House, and Big House Gaines, he seen my track team run, and he said, well, the problem is you are using basketball players. You can't win with them. You need to go and get you some track people. And then I went to Florida where I had one of my classmates coaching at Miami-Dade Junior College. And then I went down and found Roy Ector and some of the other guys who were very good. And he also was my assistant coach. So Roy and all those guys came up, about six of them in a car. They broke down about five times before they got there. But once they got there, they said, well, at least you told us the truth. You said that you didn't have a good track program. You were sorry. And we're going to work this thing out together. And that's what we did. And so I did get two good basketball players like Allison Ingram and Hodge and some of those guys from the basketball. But I really got guys who ran track. And so I find out it's just like anything else. You can get guys from football teams. You can get guys from basketball teams. But if they are football players happen to run track, they'll be okay. And if they're basketball players and have to run track, they'll be okay. But if you got a track guy who have to play football or basketball, you're going to be great.
Oh, really? You mean the transition between, a track player can probably play football and be a more successful football player than the other direction.
Right, yeah.
Why do you think that is? Is it a matter of training or is that
because
mechanics?
Because it's a matter of training and discipline of a track athlete and another sport athlete.
We got a lot of football players and basketball players mad at you just now. You're saying they're not as disciplined.
But. Right. Well, they can go ahead on. But they asked me one time, matter of fact, in England, why we don't have anybody to beat Usain Bolt. And I said, we have a whole lot of folks can beat Usain Bolt. And they said, well, who? I said, LeBron James, Randy Moss, all these guys. They were fast. They were Randy Moss was a great track guy. But the fact is that they're going to make $50 million, $100 million, and the most you're going to probably make in track is about $10 or $12 million.
How big a role does mechanics play? Can you look at an athlete and say those knees aren't going to be right for sprinting?
Yeah, biomechanics and techniques is a big role in it, because the fact that you can't give speed. You can't give speed. Speed is something that most kids are born with. And it don't make what color you are. If you got speed and fast twitch, you're going to be good anyway. But if you can shape them up, shape that speed up, give them the right mechanics, and learn how to use their arms, how to drive their knee forward, how to distract the ground properly, and it helps a lot. And because the speed is already there, and all you have to do is shape it up. Because if I can give speed, my daughter been running fast, and my daughter don't run fast, so I don't give away speed.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
that's a good point. That was a point you made to one of your mentors, right? You asked for help. Tell us about that. Who said you didn't? He didn't need your help, or you didn't need his help.
With Dr. Walker.
Yeah, was that?
Yeah. He's. You know, it's amazing how this guy is North Carolina Central. I'm at St. Augustine's. And he took all his time out to help me and to teach me how to be a good track coach. And then, I got Al Brewer over there at Duke, who taught me a lot about procedures. We went to Duke one day. We going to Duke to a track meet. I never forget it. And we got over there with our little bus, and we jumped out, and we ready to run. And Al said, you didn't declare your team. And I said, declare it? I said, what is that? He said, you're supposed to, if you're going to run in this meet, you need to declare your team. And I said, well, I didn't declare. I didn't know. And I said, thank you. And Al said, well, you all can't run. And so I think one of the kids getting ready to mouth off, I just shut him up and said, hey, it's not his problem. It's our problem. We got back on the bus, and we went back to St. Aug and got on the grass, and we trained. Mm. And Al said that from that day on, he made me one of his personal coaches, because he said most times when you do that to a team, a school, they start a cursing and acting crazy and wild and want to blame the people, but you just took your team and went back. And he said that he knew then that I would be the kind of guy that will eventually run some of the United States national teams.
And that's the discipline part of this, yep. Once you get past the mechanics, and that's something you have to convey to your athletes.
Yeah, and you have to have that discipline. You got to know, like Kenny Rogers said, know when to hold them and know when to fold them.
And you did coach U.S. Olympic teams, right?
Yes. I coached 96 team. I was the assistant coach. And every event, I was in charge of won a gold medal. Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
Every event that I was in charge, and I was in charge of about 6 events, and they all won gold medals.
How much of that, I mean, when you say that, now, at this point, you're dealing with premier athletes.
Premier athletes, but the thing is to learn how to discipline them, too.
Yeah.
Because those premier athletes, they need somebody there when they coach. Their coach can't get in the international zone. It's just, so far they can go, and so far they can train you. Like, I never forget Michael Johnson in 96 when I told Michael, I said, Michael, your physio, your trainer cannot get into the international zone. So after you finish the 200 semis, you only have about 25 minutes to go before the finals. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to give my physio my badge. I don't need to be down there with you, so that he can get you ready and rub you down and make sure you're stretched and get ready for the finals. See, those kind of decisions, it takes somebody.
You don't need a coach. You need a trainer down there.
Yeah.
So,
you don't need
it
nobody.
It paid off. He did well.
and you know what the results?
World record.
In the 200 meters.
Yeah. At that point, the fastest man on earth.
Right, fastest man on earth at that point.
One of the premier track and field coaches in college athletics, George Williams, my guest on The State of Things. Talking about your time at the Olympics, you went to 3 U.S. Olympics.
Yes. After that, I was in Australia, which I had about 3 or 4 kids from St. Augustine's University on that team, and they all got gold medals on the relay team, 4x4 and the 4x1. And after that, I was the head coach then in Athens, Greece, and that was a real some crying times because of security and because of all that was going on. But I think we end up being one of the winningest Olympic teams ever. We won, the men won 19 medals.
Will you talk about the pressure and the discipline? What's it like for you to go from a Division II program to the U.S. Olympic team in terms of just the pressure and the spotlight?
Oh, yes. It doesn't matter any different from where you're from or when you're dealing with people. It's how you treat people. It's the relationship that you gain in people and the relationship they have for you. And that's one thing about in 2004, you can ask any of those guys from Tim Mack to Justin Gatlin, all those guys who won, is that I had complete discipline. I made sure that they would understood why they were there. They were there to win medals. They were there to represent the United States of America. If any outside things that need to be done, that was my job. That was my job to take care of their parents. That was my job to get their equipment where it need to go. It's the coaching staff job to do that. Your job is to concentrate, to train, and you and your coaches to get ready to win medals. And we had some up and downs with some kids. I made some decisions that was really tough. Kid that I didn't run in the Olympics because of some issues. And some kids had some issues that I did run and got a silver medal. So it's the decision. You're representing the United States of America. That's all you have on your chest. You're representing yourself, your family, your institution, St. Augustine's, and the whole United States of America, 350 million people. So the decisions that you make, because everybody couldn't do nothing but make suggestions, you have to make the decisions. So you have to think about those decisions. And it's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure. I think it took about maybe a year and a half for this shoulder to get back right because there's so much pressure.
Oh, my goodness. George Williams, my guest, athletic director and track coach at St. Augustine's University, 35 national championships under his belt. And our conversation will continue in a moment. Please stay tuned. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. This hour, talking with George Williams, track coach and athletic director at St. Augustine's University, historically black university in Raleigh, North Carolina. We're talking about the Olympics and some of the tough choices you had to make. So give us an example. What kinds of choices did you make?
Well, one tough choice was the 4x1 relay. I had a young man on the 4x1 relay that was outstanding, and I know we could have easily gotten a gold medal with him in But as we got ready to go in to the zone, the international zone, and to get ready to go on the track, I got a call from IAAF saying that he was tested positive for a drug. And they said, but he still could run. But as soon as the race over with, they were going to test him positive, test him again. So I went to all my physios, my doctor, my trainer, and asked them, how long does this drug stay in the system? And they said, well, it all depends on how much you weigh, how much you've consumed and all this and all that. And so I had to make a decision not to run this young man.
Because to explain this further, if he had tested positive after the race, mm-hmm. would it disqualify the entire team?
Would it disqualify the whole team, yes. And so at that time, then I had to face his lawyer. I had to face his parents. And his agent, and so it was a tough decision, and I thought that they talked about a lawsuit, but all they could have got was a Acura SUV out of me. I didn't have anything, so it didn't bother me. It didn't worry me that much anyway, so I said, well, y'all go ahead and do what you have to do, yeah. But I think this is the right thing for the country.
And you had another choice where, I mean, there's an athlete who you had to hold back. Another yeah. athlete who everybody else was telling you to send home, and you thought, uh-uh.
Yeah, and there was another athlete they asked me to send home, and they said that he was bad. He was kicking, and he was doing a lot of bad things, and that I need to send him home. And I talked with him, and once he told me what his problem was, and I told him I said, what's your problem is? He said, well, my problem is that I have a problem with so-and-so and so, and that, and then I brought him over, and he was my roommate for a couple of days, and we talked it out.
Well, I should point out, I mean, he was drinking, right?
Yeah, he was drinking heavily and really very harsh to a lot of people and doing a lot of bad things and cursing. And I told him that he would have to stop all that. But if he had won a medal, I said, well, look, let's get this right. You know, if you want to stay with me, I'm going to let you stay with me a couple of days. We'll straighten everything out. Then I'm going to put you in with my sports psychologist, and I'm going to have her to work with you every day, and I want you to practice every day with me. And we straighten the young man out, and he won a silver medal.
Wow.
Yeah, and his problems no more either because he had money to take care of those problems.
Got things worked out. Well, yeah. What kinds of things were you saying? What was the conversation like as this conversion was taking place in a very short period of time, right?
Yeah, well, I talked to them about how hard he worked to get there to the Olympics. Then I talked to him about there's nobody out there to hurt him and that – the problem he's having now is a little financially. And if he gets his act together, and I'm here to help him, then he could win from $40,000 to $60,000 to $80,000, and plus he had a shoe deal. He could probably got more in his contract there. And then this would help you take care of the issue that you had back at home with your baby and your baby mama. Mm-hmm. And he said, yes, sir, coach. And he said, you're the only one to come and really wanted to help me. And the U.S. Wanted to send him home. And I told him to give me that opportunity to work with him, and I worked with him. And so he's a count in that 19 medal. So,
and he's, yeah, he won a silver. So what, you're a Division II, you've been at the Olympics, you have all these gold medals, 35 championships. Mm-hmm. Have you been courted to Division I? Is it something you want to do?
Yes, there have been a lot of Division I's. I had a good friend from Duke, Mike McGee, who was an AD, and every school that he went to, he called me to be the track coach. And I thought about it a lot, and he was a good guy, but I had a lot of admiration for my alma mater because they gave me a chance. And I was doing so well with student athletes. We were graduating about 90% of them, 80% of our student athletes, and they were getting out, getting good jobs and teaching, and a lot of them was in the coaching business. Now I got them from the University of Pittsburgh and North Carolina State and everywhere. But I really wanted to go to a D1 school, but I wanted to stay local because my daughter was still in high school, and my wife had a good teaching job in the Wake County school system, and we sat down and we thought about trying to uproot and move to another place, and how we had to start over. She would have to find a job, and my daughter had to make new friends in high school, and so we said we'll stay with it, and we would love to have gotten a job from North Carolina State or Carolina or something close where I can go, either North Carolina Central. Mm-hmm. But it didn't happen that way, so I'm happy the way it happened.
And you keep winning championships, 35 championships. How do you do it year after? I mean, you talked about these athletes winning, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. Takes a little of the edge off. Does winning a lot of championships take the – apparently not for you.
No. It's just you have to go. It's just still everybody, you know, once you get at the top of the mountain, everybody want to knock you off. And it's easy to come down as it's going up. But once you get there – you just have to figure out how to stay there because it's really hard. Yeah. And I've had some good people. I have a great assistant coach in Sandy Chapman and Andrea Gibson and Sophie. I have a good support system, and those three people have supported me for quite a while. And they all ran for me. So that was one of the great things. They all Sandy was an All-American in the 800 meters. Andrea's All-American and a Hall of Fame in the NCAA and the hurdlers and the jumps. And Sophie was a sprinter. And matter of fact, Sophie's sons run for me now. So you have a good support system, and that means you've done something right for these kids to want to come back and help you. And Sandy been with me about 12 years now, and Andrea, and they all been with me for quite a while.
Administrators at St. Augustine, you know.
And so it's been good, and they kind of know what I want and what I need and what kind of person I am. They know I get that Florida itis sometime, and they can deal with it and understand it. And then you meet people like Joe Williams and Mike Krzyzewski and guys who have a lot of admiration for what I've done and talk to me about it a lot of times. That's why I always have a lot of like for Mike because he always said, Coach Williams, anytime you want to come to a Duke game, you always got two seats behind the bench. And for a guy like that to tell you something like that, mm-hmm. it means a lot. So it's not about all the money that I could have made and all that. It's sometimes about friendship. And he also helped the university by having a game that paid us about $15,000 to help our program get off the run. And also, Roy Williams has done the same thing. And so we got some good people out there in the Division I level who know what the small colleges go through. And so you have to respect those kind of people too and acknowledge those kind of people because they've done good for a lot of folks. And even to see Roy go through that nonsense was kind of a disgrace because the fact that if something could have been worked out, you know, between him and the people around him. And
what about that in the big programs? I mean, you call it nonsense, but I think a lot of people are taking it very seriously about the impact of money.
It's real serious, but it's sometimes it's not. It's something. It's just like you or me. If you are taking something and you know it's wrong, then you're just as fault as the person who's giving it to you. Mm. And sometimes you have to look at that. And
well,
I'm not saying McCann was wrong. I'm not saying Roy was wrong. But it's a system sometimes you have to really look at. And see, in schools like us can't even get into a system like that. Somebody asked me one day, said, what about your kids on drugs? I said, shit, we can't even buy aspirin for a headache. How we going to get on drugs? You know what I mean? And it's the way the system works. Mm. But what happened is that you straighten the system out, and a guy like him probably didn't even encounter something like that, you know?
I guess the big complaint is there's just too much money in it and it doesn't belong at university level. I mean, we should go to some kind of semi-pro or what other, you know, in other countries they have club leagues and they don't involve the universities in their sub-pro sports.
You know, you wonder about that a lot. I think about it a lot. But you look at our program, ain't no money in it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at the big universities, it's a whole lot of money in it. But who put the money in it? The public, the alumni,
mm-hmm.
They put it in. The university don't put it in it, you know. And then it's the will to win all the time. And some of them get to the point, win at all costs. Mm-hmm. And that's where it begin to be a problem because most of the schools going to get good talent because of the fact that if I had to play ball now, I probably wanted to go to Duke or Carolina because the fact that I knew I probably would have been in the pros now because the fact that those coaches have a good relationship with the student athlete and they try to make it best for them in order to go to another level. But like I always say, if you're not in the huddle, you don't know to play what the other folks are doing or what the other folks are saying. About these universities, these coaches, or these schools. But it doesn't. One thing I do know, they helped a lot of young people make it along the way.
Let's talk about you're at St. Aug's, which is having, like many historically black colleges and universities, some financial troubles. What's the future for St. Aug's and for historically black colleges?
We got a lot of financial. They have a George Williams Athletic Complex, and it's been out there for about 8 or 9 years, and I can't even get it paved. You know, one time I was trying to raise some money, a couple of $1 million to get it done, and one time Mr. Belts was helping me out, and something happened with that. He got older, and we took so long with the process until then I called back, and they said he's not doing this anymore. Mm-hmm. So he was a very good friend of Dr. Walker and myself. But, you know, I think he's about 90-some years old now, and I don't know whether he's doing what he's used to do or can he think in that way again. Can he think that way again? But anyway, then you people around here, even the local people are not giving, you know. Right. I said to myself, I said, now I represented the United States of America all these times. Make sure I did the right thing for them. But I can't get anybody to help me finish a stadium.
I'm talking with St. Aug's track and field coach as well as athletic director George Williams on the state of things. He's won 35 Division II national track championships in his time at St. Aug's in Raleigh. What about the future of what is the role of historically black colleges? Do they still play a role? Are they still important?
Well, some of them is going to be very good. Some, you know, and there's some of them is going to fall by the wayside. I think St. Augustine's going to be here for a long time. We got a good administration now. We got a new president, Dr. Edward Ward, and he's come in with some new ideas and some great ideas. He's begin to embrace the community again and do a lot of good things. And we'll begin to get those donations that we used to get. Sometimes people shut down on you. And it's in the Episcopalian school, and the Episcopal Church is very much involved, and so we'll be one of the strong ones, but there will be some that will not, and most of those will probably be state schools, because of so many state schools, and they're all funding for the same thing, and but I think the private schools have a better segment than most of them, and but any school that have mismanagement, it would not last long. Yeah,
those are the tough ones. So what about you? 71 years old. You've been at the school 38 years, 35 national championships. Going to keep going? How long are you going to keep going?
Well, I'm going to help Dr. Ward for a few years. And I'm quite sure anything I can do for Dr. Ward to help him out, I would do it. And he asked me to stay for a few years. But just like anything else, you know, you get tired. And I'm still helping students. And I probably can help him, continue to help him a little more once I leave. but I promised him a couple of years, and I'm going to give it to him. And when I make my promise, it's important. It's my bond. And so if he get up one day and say, well, Coach, I had enough of you, then I'm gone. Okay?
I can't imagine that happening. When you look back, what are some of your greatest accomplishments, would you say, in your mind?
I guess the greatest accomplishment is staying at my alma mater and to graduate in as many student athletes that I have, and to see all of them out with great jobs and doing great things and helping other young people along the way. And I think that's the only thing I can consider. And I have a lovely family, and my family has done real well. My daughter's a PhD chemist. And she worked for Procter & Gamble. My wife taught well. And we're enjoying life now. We do a lot of things together. So everything has been very good. But I just hope that everything worked well for all those involved. I hope Carolina get out their mess. I hope St. Augustine's University get the students that we need and to continue our efforts to continue to help the young black Americans, which we were founded for, and move on.
George Williams, what a great pleasure to meet you and to talk with you. Thank you so much
Frank,
for joining us.
Thank you, outstanding. Thank you.
George Williams, athletic director and championship track coach at St. Augustine's University in Raleigh. If you want to hear more and find out more about the program, our website is stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Will Michaels, and Hottie is with us. Hottie has just joined the staff. Mawogdi is on right on board. I got your name kind of right. The guy just started, and I get his name wrong. Our intern, Charlie Shelton, Robin Copley's technical director, Al Wadarski, sitting in today. I get the Polish names right. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.